Shabbat Shalom. It's the week of Ki Teitzei, August 24th, Elul the 11th, 5767, and I'm Rabbi Jim Egolf. Welcome to my podcast. Thank you for tuning in, or potting in, if you will. We'll be listening to music during this. We will be also having both an article that appeared in the Jewish Exponent and my sermon from this week, and I hope you sit back and relax and enjoy.
Mayim ganim ber mayim, mayim chayim. Mayim ganim ber mayim, mayim chayim. Ber mayim, mayim chayim. Ber ozim ilevanon. Ber mayim, mayim chayim. Ber ozim ilevanon. Ber mayim, mayim chayim.
On Remembering and Its Opposite. August 23rd, 2007, appearing in the Jewish Exponent. Don't you hate it when you forget what you were about to say? It was on the tip of your tongue, and then, as if by some magic spell, the thought is whisked away forever, it seems. Then we engaged in that systematic attempt to reconstruct the events, conversation, or story we were involved with in order to remember. Zachor et asher asah lecha Amalek begins the Maftir section of the Torah portion this week. We are explicitly told to Zachor, remember the crimes of Amalek. In their attack, the Amalekites hit from the rear and sought to kill those least able to defend themselves. Some wonder why these actions earn the Amalekites not just a place in the enemies category, but led God to make them a people to be slaughtered without mercy. One idea is that Amalek acted with hubris. Not only did the Amalekites take on the Israelites, but they attacked God by assaulting those who were least secure. You shall not imperil the rights of the stranger or the orphan. Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 17. To attack those God is most concerned with is, in itself, an attack on God. Thus were the Amalekites to be sworn enemies of both God and Israel. Zachor, we must remember. But can forgetting be sacred too? When you reap the field's harvest and forget a sheaf in the field, do not return to get it. It shall go to the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 19. Even if we recall the fallen sheaf, we are commanded to leave it. We are instructed to be on God's side by overlooking it. Lo tashav lekachto. The Torah tells us that by remembering and forgetting, we bring a blessing. We reconcile remembering and forgetting for the sake of being a blessing by God. After looking at these two examples, a common theme emerges. The thread that runs through these contradictory actions is keeping an eye on God's concerns and blessings. God's focus is the weakest members of society. Those who earn God's blessing are the ones who make God's concern their concern. It is easy to nod one's head in agreement. However, living this way is far different and more difficult. I often wonder if we're living in a society that would appeal to an Amalekite. Too often, the fallen sheaves or unearned pennies of a business take priority over other values. In addition, when the poor, widow, homeless, and stranger are attacked, whether physically or by economic realities, our society's response is less than godly. This also plays out in our personal lives. Throughout my rabbinate, I've heard stories of families fighting over money to the point where they no longer speak to one another. They are only brought together, grudgingly, when someone passes away, as if this constitutes a truce. And once the mourning has ended, everyone returns to the real conflict. What is worth remembering and forgetting? The Torah would tell us that remembering those who need comfort and care is God's primary concern. When we act in accordance with these interests, we act in God's name and don't allow Amalek to win by seeing the weak suffer. Torah teaches that when we forget about the petty and the insignificant, not having every single dime by purposefully forgetting the fallen sheaves, we make God's intention our own. As we arrive at the most sacred time of the year, I hope that you can use this parasha as your litmus test for teshuvah, tefillah, and tzedakah. Forget the minor things that keep you from goodness, and remember to aspire to live as a blessing. Blessings to you, and shalom.
Yehi
famous painting of cut fruit once hung in a museum. It was lower than most and thus in reach of children. People would pass this painting and remark how wonderful and rich the fruit looked. Comments would resound that the master painter had portrayed this with life-like qualities, so that any other painting would only pale in comparison. A 5-year-old boy named Jonathan was taken, or probably drugged more like it, to the art gallery, and only to hear his parents ooh and ah over the still life of the fruit. Johnny decided that He really didn't understand what all the fuss was about, so he slipped under the barrier and walked up to the painting. After the adults had spoken of the fruit in such glowing terms, Johnny decided it must be delicious and walked up to the painting to taste the fruit. It was only at this point that the adults actually noticed that he had gotten away from them. And as he stuck out his tongue and licked the painting, he turned to inform them, "I hate to tell you this, but this fruit tastes really awful, kind of like paint. Pfft." I share this with you as we enter into the Torah portion of Ki Tetzeh. This parsha has a multitude of laws that one might consider to be one of those laundry list types of Torah portions. Rules for everything come out at this time, including such disparate items as making a railing around one's roof, chasing away the mother bird when taking eggs from a nest, and not plowing with an ox and donkey yoked together. And then at the beginning there are some rules concerning war. After reading through this parsha, we might be tempted to do one of two things. Either we could focus intently on one particular part of the parsha regarding the pinching or swiping as opposed to harvesting of the corn of another field. Or we could read them and assign to this parsha the notion that once again there was some editorial fight in putting together the Torah, and the committee version, that would be the sausage approach, won. I would like to suggest to you a different idea based on the theme of tonight's Shabbat service and Oneg. Some of you are here for Miftan this evening. Miftan is a committee that was born out of our congregation's desire to invite and bring new members into the Beth David family. When anyone goes to join a synagogue, she or he or the family is often drawn by one particular thing. Some of us are drawn by the religious school and the expectation or anxiety of the day when our children are called to the Torah to become B'nai Mitzvah. Others of us are in search of community and want to get to know other people. The drive for social action, the Taken Olam B'Malchut Shaddai, to repair the world in the name of God and Judaism, might bring you to Beth David. The bottom line is that we are all drawn to a synagogue, usually by one concern or need, and joining fulfills that need. Tonight I want to invite you to go further and expand your sense of what it means to be a member of a synagogue. And I need to return to the story about Johnny for this. Everyone was enamored with the appearance of the fruit in the painting from the gallery. It is easy to have, as one rabbi has put it, carpool tunnel vision, where one sees the synagogue through the lens of our car windows, or our one link or connection to a synagogue. I think of Beth David as more of a web than a single cord. I would invite you to get engaged in your synagogue, in our synagogue, and find at least one other thing that attracts you in some way to fully appreciate what a synagogue can do and mean to you. We have to discover the other ways that the light of your intent is refracted through the lens of Beth David. This brings me back to the Torah portion. The parsha for this week seems to not contain a common story in the Torah, but I think it does. While the Israelites sit on the eastern side of the Jordan River, waiting for the green light. Okay. They didn't have green lights back then, but you get the idea. To enter into the land and receive the promise given to Abraham, there are some last-minute reminders. When they enter the land, there will still be some rules of how the place should be governed and how they should be in the land. Freedom will come with responsibility. And it is one of those last moments to enumerate the rules that will define how the Israelites will conquer the land but not rule it with the savagery they experienced in Egypt. These numerous laws are how God's will is to be refracted through the actions of the Israelites. Earlier this week, I sat with a potential congregant and we talked about spirituality and religion. I suggested that religion was a crystal and spirituality was the combination of light which enters the crystal as white and is often shown on the other side as a prism. I want to expand this with you this evening. There are usually one or two things that drive people to go in search of a spiritual address. I would like for you to consider that as the white light that enters the prism of Beth David, that your light continues to shine, and that you take that white light and find the various hues and colors, the different ways that Beth David and synagogue life can speak to you, and that you embrace those pieces of Beth David that touch your soul. So is this an uncommon idea in Jewish history? No. Actually, the notion of having light refracted or finding our way to find our place has a parallel. It is said when God gave the Ten Commandments, the following midrash helped to clarify what it meant when we are told that Adonai was supposed to be each person's God. The Holy One appeared to them as an icon that has a face on every side. And 1,000 people look at it, and it looks at all of them. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God, spoke, each person in Israel said, God spoke to me. As it says, I am Adonai, your God. And God spoke to each and every one according to his or her ability. And this should come as no surprise. For as the manna that fell for Israel tasted, as each person liked, so the word of God, all the more so, it also spoke to each individual person. On behalf of the board and of the executive committee of our congregation, I'd like to thank you for becoming a part of our family. If you waited to get in, I'd also like to express our appreciation for your patience. We can't do the many wonderful things we can't provide for the various colors and ways that Beth David attempts to touch your lives without you. Let's work together as we grow in this relationship to become the congregation that we will be with you. And I hope you will find the many ways Beth David creates the prism so that your white intention and our white intention creates a Jewish life with vibrant colors and energy for you and your family. The music you hear on this podcast is from Magnatunes.com and the groups Yaleh and Panacea. Please go out there and check out their website. They have some wonderful tunes, and if you can download and purchase a copy for yourself from Magnatunes.com.